This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Hi, you're listening to On the Minds of Men, Uncensored Sex Talk, with me, your host, Dr. Lori Buckley. I am so glad you joined us today because we have a wonderful guest in store, Paul Joannides, the author of The Guide to Getting It On. So you want to stay tuned, and you absolutely want to stay to the end when I'm going to give you an exercise that you can do at home tonight that's going to increase your intimacy and intensity in your lovemaking.
You said, it doesn't matter what you have in your pants if there's nothing in your brain to connect it to. You know, wanting to ask you and hear about what compelled you to write this book, to write this really comprehensive, wonderful book about sex.
I usually respond that it was revenge for 8 years in Catholic school.
How so? What happened in Catholic school, Paul?
Well, that's what didn't happen.
Okay.
Joining me today is my friend and sidekick, Mark Phelan. Hey, how you doing, Mark?
Hello, Dr. Buckley.
Hello there. So I'm wondering, what do you think about today's show?
The Guide to Getting It On. Now, there is a book that could have come in so handy for me from years and years ago. And actually, still to this day, I could learn new things.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting about sex. There's always new things to learn. Just when we think that we've got it down, we realize that there's more information and certainly a lot more exciting, wonderful things to incorporate into our sex lives. So what is it that you really want to learn the most when you open up this guide?
I immediately pictured myself like a senior in high school. If I had the lucky guys who can sit down and read this book, their first date is going to transform their lives. I think of the mistakes and the awkwardness I felt. If I would have had this kind of information, it would have been giving me that level of confidence. I would have been, pretend I was James Bond for crying out loud. I would have been just scoring at will.
Yeah, I just think your whole life would have been different. You wouldn't have needed glasses, all of the things that would have been different in your life. Well, listeners, you'll be glad to know that you have this book, The Guide to Getting It On by Paul Joannides. He's my guest today. And again, if you want to send any questions or comments to myself or my friend Mark, please write to Lori at personallifemedia.com.
Welcome to On the Minds of Men, Uncensored Sex Talk with me, your host, Dr. Lori Buckley. Today on the show, we're talking about getting it on. Our guest today is Paul Joannides, who is the author of The Guide to Getting It On. And The Guide to Getting It On, it's one of my favorite sex books. It's considered by many to be the best sex book ever written, and I would agree. It's won numerous awards, including the Ben Franklin Book Award. It's been translated into 13 different languages. The guide is filled with wonderful information covering all aspects of human sexuality. The best part about it, I think, is that other than all the wonderful information, is it really makes you laugh out loud. It's just an entertaining, wonderful book about sex. It's got 71 chapters, and in those chapters, there's such things as better mating through internet dating, beyond vanilla, explaining sex to kids, nipples, a very popular chapter. It's just a wonderful book. So welcome, Paul.
Well, hello. Thank you, Lori.
You know, I'm really excited to have you here with us today because, you know, I know that you have so much information. And our listeners, you know, I know they want to hear your advice and guidance on how to be a great lover and maybe some ways to get it on more often. So I'm going to start by, you know, wanting to ask you and hear about what compelled you to write this book, to write this really comprehensive, wonderful book about sex.
I usually respond that it was revenge for 8 years in Catholic school.
How so? What happened in Catholic school, Paul?
Well, that's what didn't happen.
Okay. But you were given some messages that you thought you wanted to avoid other people from having to kind of deal with in their life? Or what was the really compelling factor?
It was the selling of procreative sex as the only kind of sex. Anything else was
a sin. There was a different kind of sex.
Yeah. So if it didn't involve a sperm heading, you know, on a collision course with an egg, then it was a sin. So that kind of messes with a young man's mind.
And it messed with yours in a really positive way.
Yeah. It was. You know, there's so many awful things in life. Here's one of the nice things.
Yeah, it definitely is. One of the best things, I would say, definitely in the top three.
What are your other two?
Wait a minute,
chocolate?
I'm just interviewing you. Let's see, other two. I don't know, you know, food would probably be up there. It's all kind of sensuous and wonderful, though. But, you know, what you say is also important when you say it's the nice thing. It can be one of the top three or even the top one. But at the same time, it can be one of the most, you know, problematic things in our life.
Well, that would be because it's clearly attached. It can be very attached to the emotions, right?
Ideally, I think. I think there's a lot of people who have sex and they don't consider their emotions or have any.
And, you know, that's great if you can get away with it. I've never been able to. I keep trying.
Yeah. I guess there's people who do it, and certainly it's a choice. But you wrote something in your book, and I think this is relevant here. You said, it doesn't matter what you have in your pants if there's nothing in your brain to connect it to. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, I think, okay, let's look at what we tend to look at. I mean, now in terms of sex, how does a younger person define it? A guy who's grown up downloading porn on the internet, it's probably defined by genitals, mostly, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the image you get when you're downloading porn or looking at porn on the internet. And I don't think you get much help with how it interfaces with the emotional part of a relationship, how it can increase it or decrease it. We just don't get much help in that area. And hopefully that's what the book helps with a little bit. And it helps with helping you be able to talk to a partner about it. I'm just looking through my spam right now for the day. Okay, what do I have here? Boom, subject, the virgin penetrator. I guess that's supposed to be us guys, right?
No.
And then what are the other, well, if I look through my spam filter, boom, boom, boom. Let's see, I can be 3 inches longer, or I can be an inch and a half longer, or I can be a super guy. Here, man, listen to me, give yourself 3 inches longer. Here, do you want a flabbergaster? Try penis enlarged patch.
Now, we know this is, you know, what is it? I don't know if it's multi-million or billion-dollar business. I think it might be a billion-dollar business. So clearly there's some idea here that to be a good lover or to be a man, you need to have a bigger penis. And if that were the answer, actually, it might even be simpler. but we know that sex is much more complicated than that. And so, I mean, I understand what you're saying when you talk about the emotional part. But I think that there's probably a lot of our listeners who don't get why is that important to be emotionally connected to somebody when you're having sex with them.
Oh, because you'll have hell to pay if you ignore that issue.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough one.
It's a tough one. It's I guess part of the question is where you make the leap from jerking off to having sex with someone else, mm-hmm. And is the having sex with someone else just another way of getting off and jerking off? And if it is, then I think you're kind of ahead of the game just to find a new lotion or something.
Right. Well, because there's also a lot of, you know, if you don't have the emotional thing, I mean, I don't know, maybe when there's a partner involved, because I'm thinking about some of the things that can get in the way of enjoying, even if you just want to ejaculate, even from enjoying that, when there's a partner involved, you know, that they could interfere with that in a negative way, in the sense that...
In big negative ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so complicated, and I think this is what's so great about your book, because sex is complicated. I mean, there's so many. You have 71 chapters, and, you know, I think you would probably agree that you could probably add many more, and there would still be more information you can give. But I do think that the beauty of your book and what is important for our listeners to know is that there really is no how-to, but maybe ways to approach it so you can find out what's best for you and your partner.
Yeah, it's interesting. Another end of the spectrum is, okay, some guy's saying, all right, you know, he's talking about some guy who just wants to use his partner as a masturbation aid, and he's saying, I don't do that at all. I do just the opposite. Man, I am so focused on giving her orgasms. And to me, there's not much difference because it's still about your agenda for her or your agenda for you. it isn't about what does she need from this.
I get what you're saying. Right, right. So it's still all kind of self-focused and not about pleasure so much.
No, and that orgasm counting is another form of pinball, isn't it?
Yeah, and anxiety.
Yeah, and it puts a lot of anxiety on her as well. She's got to be this orgasmatron who spits them out with every three thrusts of yours and fawns over you and says, God, you're the best I've ever had.
Right, right. And then when she has that pressure, of course, she's probably not going to have any orgasms anyways.
Yeah, so, and then she starts faking them.
Right, so here's a question I have for you. What is one thing that men can do? There is one thing, but, you know, let's see if we can come up with something that men can do to become a better lover.
Well, I keep hearing the word listen, but I think ask and listen. Now, we've got a problem here because some women, you can ask till you're blue in the face, and they're not going to give you a clue one. Part of it is because a lot of them don't know themselves and they don't know their own body. And the last thing they want you to do is ask them about that. Even though you're trying to say, look, you know, if you can teach me about your body, then we can have a better experience here.
So what do you do? What do you tell them?
You know, that's a tough one. If your partner is dead set against exploring her own levels of comfort and intimacy and you want to explore them, then that's, I don't know. Then we call up Lori and say, do you have an appointment available? We need some counseling here. I need some help.
Right. And, you know, and that's probably, you know, it's funny because all of the interviews that I do with, you know, with people as yourself who are experts in this field, whatever that means, I guess we're all our own expert, but who have some knowledge or information, you know, it does come down to communication. And I find that when people do come to see me, that's the one thing that people feel really uncomfortable about. And they know they're supposed to, I think, but they don't know how to go about that. Do you have any suggestions of how to start a conversation?
Look in our culture at the words for sex, okay? Mm-hmm. If you look at most of the slang words that you would use, a lot of them are used for swearing. A lot of them are used in anger. And so you're supposed to use these words that we spit out at if someone cuts us off on the freeway, and you're supposed to say, you know, here's how I'd like to suck your cock. And, and you know, on my way to the interview, someone cut me off, and I said, you cocksucker.
Right.
So we don't have a particularly good vocabulary, even in our culture. On the other hand, what do you say? Sweetheart, would you like cunnilingus tonight? Well, that sounds about as exciting as, God, I don't know what.
Yeah, that's not going to make her, you know, want you, I don't think.
Yeah, so just even having the words to talk about things, about sex, we're really handicapped in our culture.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I love your chapter in your book, the Dirty Words chapter, because that really says it really well, what you're saying. It's true. So it's either we go to the clinical side, which is, you know, really just, you know, a turnoff, not very romantic or sexy at all. And then the other end is words, which actually, they can be kind of hot because of the way they're used, but there is definitely the negative, you know, messages and connotations associated with them that I don't even know if we're conscious of.
Well, and then take it beyond that. We don't even really know how to describe the women's genitals correctly. We call everything down there a vagina.
Right.
Well, you know, that's like calling New York, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, New York. How do you even begin when we're not even calling the right things and we're not appreciating the different parts down.
Right. So let's give a little lesson right now on the vulva, right? Because the vagina, that's
okay.
The
okay, Lori, will you go ahead and spread your legs for the listeners?
Okay. Done.
And point away.
Well, I mean, there is the focus, we know, of the clitoris. I think most men and women are now aware of the clitoris. Would you agree?
Well, on the one hand, aware of it, but on the other hand, any three women can want you to deal with that little thing three different, entirely different ways.
Right, or even 50 women in 50 different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea that you treat it, wow, I'm going to get my finger on that sucker and rub away, is not necessarily a great idea.
You know, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, I think that's something that men, a lot of men do, right? They think, oh, this is it. This is the magic place, the magic button. And so they go straight for that.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So what else should they be doing?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
What else should they be doing instead of going straight for the clitoris?
I think it's, now again, it's really awful to talk about what you should be doing because any situation is different. It could be that on, well, you know, one particular night, you and she might want to take hours just getting your clothes off. And on another night, you may want to rip them off, forget anything even hitting a foreplay, and pound away.
Right.
So situations, times of the month, all sorts of things intervene. So if you try to do everything the same way every time, that's not going to work either. So a big part of it is learning how to read each other's signals.
Ah, so that's communication, but not necessarily verbal. So there's different kinds of communication, and signals is a good one.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, that little her fingertips going up and down your arm a certain way, that might be a very definite signal.
And so to learn those signals, there could be a conversation or just an awareness.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think we do, as humans, men or women, we do have patterns. And what you're saying is, on the one hand, we want to recognize those patterns and use them as cues or signals, and we also want to make sure that we don't stick with the same patterns over and over again.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, because things are cyclic. They change. They vary. You know, what your experience was at work can have a heck of a lot to do with what you want to do in bed that night.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I mean, I agree with what you're saying, kind of, that, you know, shoulds are always a dangerous word, shoulds. But we could probably say should communicate, should be aware, should try different things, be adventurous.
Right. And should be conscious maybe of tension building, the ability to build tension. And what's that about? I mean, let's say she's not in a dive on my clitoris kind of mood.
Uh-huh.
How do you build tension so that within however often or however long, that clitoris is going to be like screaming for you, say, hey, guy, come here.
Right.
You know, that would be a real, that's probably a great art.
Yeah, that is so true. And that's, I think, a piece that a lot of people miss. And on that note, what we're going to do really quickly, we're going to take a very short break. I'm Dr. Lori. I'm with Paul Jonides, and we will be right back.
Listen to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra, a weekly internet audio program from PersonalLifeMedia.com. Learn ancient secrets that turn on the soul of sex at PersonalLifeMedia.com.
We're back, and you're listening to On the Minds of Men. I'm your host, Dr. Lori. We're talking to Paul Jonides about getting it on. And before the break, we were talking about building tension, which is kind of what we did, I think, maybe during that break. Well, maybe a little. I don't know. So building tension. There's something so powerful about that. And do you have any suggestions of maybe a way to do that? I have an idea.
If you come home and
yeah.
Let's say there's 20 things that need to be done, and she's overwhelmed, and you go ahead and grab the vacuum cleaner and do the carpets and clean the toilet and do all sorts of unpleasant things and relieve her from that burden. For some women, that can help a lot. That can build a lot of tension in a good way.
The ultimate seduction, yeah.
Other women, you know, that's not going to work, and they're going to be pissed at you because if they're really getting old, they're going to, you didn't do a good enough job. I have to do all of it. So again, it depends on the relationship, but maybe taking some time to take her, maybe she's a hockey fan. Well, maybe taking the time to get tickets to her when her favorite hockey teams are in town. Maybe it's just something, again, much more simple, maybe a foot instead of grabbing between her legs, maybe take just a whole heck of a lot of time rubbing her feet. Some women enjoy having their hair brushed.
So again, we need to know what our partner likes, and the best way to do that is through awareness and communication. But I'm also thinking that building up tension, and I think you're saying the same thing, but another word to put on it is, or words, is creating obstacles. So rather than going straight for it, there's some obstacle that's, and I think obstacle, I don't know if that's the best word, but I think it might be, where you know there's something stopping you from right this second, you know, having sex. But you know it's coming. It's just, but right now there needs to be this, these things done first. Or maybe you don't know it's coming. You know, there's something about saying, hey, we're not going to have sex, as you know, sensate focus, which we use a lot in therapy, which is, you know, instructing partners to just touch one another in a pleasurable, sensual way, but to stay away from genitals and stay away from intercourse is highly arousing. That obstacle, saying, hey, you don't do this.
Yeah. And let's, as you said that, I was thinking too, boy, what about when there's a children or babies in the household? Some ways, that changes things, too, because, you know, maybe she's got all day long kids fighting for her lap, fighting to be on top of her, and maybe the last thing she wants you is to suddenly fight for that. Maybe she needs some independence and control over her body.
Right, yeah.
And how do you help her with that? How do you, you know, how do you kind of seduce her and get her wanting to come to you? We all have phases in our lives when the situations change and are different.
And so are you saying that we should just accept that and go with the flow, and if we can accept it and be mindful of it, does that then help us overcome that? Or because there are people, right, who that happens. There's kids and they're understanding, but then before they know it, you know, 6 months have gone by and they haven't had sex.
Yeah, and what do you do with that when that happens? What do you, you know, or long, how do you handle it there? How do you approach it?
Well, you know, I have to find out what is going on. I mean, sometimes it's just a matter of saying, hey, you gotta make some plans here and put this back on the priority and, you know, be mindful of what's going on. I mean, it's never really simple. Like we said, there's a lot of complicated issues that come up. But the biggest thing is the children become the focus, and they need to become the focus at least for a while.
Yep,
you know, they're very dependent upon us, and it's difficult to turn that off and then to become a sexual being and a sexual partner when our identification is parent. So it's sort of working towards that and saying, hey, your relationship is a priority, and while it's, you know, not taking away from your children, you need to take that time away and make some plans and have a night out and have some sex.
Yeah.
That's sort of a simplified view, but sometimes that's all it takes, just making up your mind to do it. I don't think people say, I'm not going to have sex for, you know, 6 months or a year. It's just before they know it, they're like, oh, my God, I didn't even, how did all that time go by?
Yeah, and I think, too, especially with two children there, if you acknowledge that it's going to be, it's really going to interrupt your sexuality for a while. It's not going to make you any less horny, but it's going to interrupt how you actually have sex together, and maybe you can both acknowledge that that's a time when you're going to be doing a lot of masturbation. And, you know, maybe at least be able to cuddle up next to your partner when you're doing that or something, and it's part of the acknowledgement.
Right, and you know, one of the things that you talk about in your book, and we know is very important, is, you know, what's your definition of sex? And, you know, intercourse, which you call in the book horizontal jogging. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that. That's one idea, but maybe you're not up for that. But there's so many other forms of intimacy or sex play or different things that you can do.
Yeah, sure. What are some of the better ones you've seen and heard of in your practice?
Well, you know, it's like you say, it's the same thing. It's, you know, we could talk to 50 different couples and they would have 50 different ideas, or maybe 100 different ideas. But I think a lot of people say, oh, it's just, you know, who has that kind of time? Who has that kind of energy? I'm too tired. And because it's a big production for them, because there's so much pressure put on this idea of quote unquote having sex. And when we can sort of redefine that and say, hey, how do you two just want to, you know, have fun together and just enjoy each other's bodies? It could be making out, you know, it could be just spooning, you know, oral sex. There's so many, masturbation, mutual masturbation. There's so many different ways. And just to expand your definition of what sex is.
Yeah, we kind of get caught up on the notion that, you know, it's gotta, you got to have that penis going and inside of
something. And there needs to be orgasms, ejaculation, and we need to take that away from it, and that makes it also more exciting. So horizontal jogging, I like that. Tell me how you came up with that term.
Oh, boy, that was probably one of those margarita in
Hey, you know, it has their place, a margarita now and again.
You know what? I kind of hate to change the subject, but one thing we were talking about when we were talking about different approaches to a clitoris is I think a lot of guys also have the sense that, boy, the, you know, finger fucking is every girl's delight, and you kind of make your finger imitate a penis inside a vagina, and boy, is that kind of off base.
Right. So talk more about that.
The more I hear from different women, the more you really need to explore and find out. And it could be sometimes a finger inserted early on is painful and puts everything off, where a finger inserted when she wants it there is much different. Or some women may not like a finger in there at all.
Right. And if there is a finger in there, it should always be well lubed, whether it's with lubricant or saliva or whatever. But it can't be dry.
Yes, exactly.
Seems obvious, but I don't think it is.
Yes, and then you got to figure, well, does she like the finger to? Sometimes, if she likes the finger inside, it doesn't mean she wants you to be doing anything with it. So you have to find out. Sometimes it might be just a kind of a circular swirling motion as opposed to a thrusting motion. Sometimes it might be a kind of a come here motion. Sometimes not. These things you've really got to ask about.
Yeah.
And
it always comes down to communication.
Yeah.
It does. I have a question. I mean, we are running out of time, but I definitely want to ask you this question because I think it's important. You know, I hear it all the time. I'm sure you do. You know, people who, men or women, who want to try something maybe that they've never tried before, or something that they think is kinky or a little not normal is usually the word they use. They always want to know if they're normal. And there's things that definitely they want to try, and they don't know how to bring this up. Do you have any suggestions of a way to do that?
I think props can be helpful. By props, I know, like with my book, like you say, there's 70 chapters, and I always encourage couples to read it together, or to say, you know, and maybe you don't want to say, honey, I want to do this, but you say, hey, look at this chapter. What do you think about that?
Yeah.
That can be easier. Or if you read erotica together, or something, you know, something might come up that hints of that thing you'd like to try, and then you can see what your partner thinks about it.
Yeah, so having tools, whether it's a book, instructional, such as your own, or an erotic book, or films, any kind of tool is a good idea. Makes it a little bit easier. Or what if you say, well, you know, hey, my friend tried.
Funny, we allow ourselves to have those with gardening, if you like gardening, or jewelry making, if you like jewelry making. Anything, you know, if you have a hobby, as long as it isn't sex, it's okay and expected to have magazines and books and things like that.
Right. Yeah,
boy,
and to talk about it.
For some reason, you know, with sex, that's porn. Gotta hide that.
Yeah, it's something that is not going to be easily overcome. And, you know, we're working on it, right? I mean, I know, you know, your book is making a difference in so many people's lives. And you know, it's required, you know, and I'm going to tell the listeners that your book is required reading in a lot of college courses about sexuality, mine included. And, I mean, you know, we could start them young. And so they can get this information so they feel okay about their sexuality and about their feelings and about their chosen ways to express themselves sexually. And that's something that is really difficult to change someone's mindset when we are given so many negative messages in our society about sex.
Yeah, just the way it's used in advertising is often pretty darn negative.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of people say, oh, but it's so much better now because it's so out there on the internet and the porn, and it's so out there. But those messages are just as dangerous sometimes.
Yeah, they can be extremely strange. And just, God, what is it? Anything from, if you look at how many models or women actresses actually have their own natural breasts?
Have their what?
Unless they're really buxom to begin.
So oh, right.
We have this idea that a normal woman has a breast implant.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many kind of bizarre notions about sexuality that we kind of grew up with. It's kind of strange.
Yeah, it is. And I love what you say about, you know, our brains being so important and emotions, and because otherwise, yeah, jack off. And, you know, certainly it is a lot easier, and it's probably not any less pleasurable than if you're with someone who you're not feeling connected to.
Yeah. You know, trust, we forget. Trust takes a lot of time and experience to evolve.
Right.
And there can be lots of people who are married but don't necessarily trust each other.
Absolutely true. Yeah. So trust is important because you want to be able to feel safe and open up emotionally and physically to a partner that you're with. And that's a whole other interview. But I want to say to the listeners, if you have any mail or comments that you want to send to me, you email me at laurie@personallifemedia.com. And to find out more about sex and Paul's book, The Guide to Getting It On, go to his website at goofyfootpress.com. That's GoofyFootPress.com. And just thank you so much for joining us. I mean, there's so much information. Clearly, we need a lot more time. Hopefully, we'll be able to speak again in the future. But I really do appreciate you joining us today and giving us all of that wonderful information.
Well, thanks so very, very much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. And that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening. For text and transcripts of this show and other shows on Personal Life Media Network, please visit our website at personallifemedia.com. This is your host, Dr. Lori Buckley.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, Guest Speaker Interviews, a companion program to the weekly audio show, Life in an Orgasm-Based Community, on personallifemedia.com. Push into the unknown with visiting sexperts at One Taste San Francisco on personallifemedia.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Lori, and you are listening to On the Minds of Men. This is your exercise for the week. This is a great exercise that I actually give to a lot of couples. It's based on Masters and Johnson Sensate Focus exercise, and it's what Paul and I were talking about when we talked about tension and how creating that obstacle and taking away the goal of sexual intercourse or orgasm and basically taking away all goals at all and just focusing on pleasure can really build up that sexual tension and really make things much more pleasurable and exciting. So today's exercise is called the Pleasurable Touch Exercise, and it really is about sensual touch. Sensual touch, it's such a pleasurable way to explore and enhance intimacy and really learn about your partner. Now, in this exercise, again, you want to take away all the goals, you know, of having to do anything. As a matter of fact, you know, take it away where you're not even allowed to have intercourse or orgasms, because that's not what this is about. It's about pleasure, not goal-oriented sex, orgasm, or even sexual arousal. Now, of course, you may experience some sexual arousal, and that's great. Enjoy it, relish in it, just don't act on it. Remember, this is also not a massage. Massage is a form of healing touch. This is sensual touch. And I don't need to go into the difference. I think you know what that is. Now, what you're going to do is you're going to take turns. One of you will be the giver, and then the other one will be the receiver. And what you want to do is you want to make sure you schedule a night that you and your partner are going to complete this exercise. And, you know, everybody's busy, but make this a special night and talk about it. Tease one another about it. Build some anticipation and tension. And, you know, really make this a wonderful, fun time that you can have together. So now if you're the giver, what you're going to do is you're going to create a sensual and comfortable environment. Make sure you're not going to be distracted or disturbed. You know, lock out the dogs and the cats. Light a candle or two, maybe some music, maybe some lotion or massage oil if that's what you like. You know, maybe put on some clean sheets or draw a bath for your partner. What you're going to do as the giver is you are going to focus on your pleasure. And this isn't about pleasing your partner. Your partner, as the receiver, is going to focus on the pleasure that they're experiencing. Now, you don't want to talk. You just want to be. You just want to feel and just experience how your partner's skin feels, how their body feels, the firmness, the softness, the roundness, and just enjoy it. Clothing is optional. As the giver, you can wear clothing or not. And as the receiver, you can, I would say, either go naked or wear some underwear, whatever feels most comfortable. What you're going to do is you're going to spend 30 minutes as the giver. And you're going to do about 10 to 15 minutes on each side. And just explore your partner's entire body from his or her head to his or her toes. And you don't want to touch the breast or genitals. Remember, this is not about sex. This is about sensuality and pleasure. So stay away from those areas, although teasing near the areas is certainly allowed. Have some fun. Be creative. Try using your fingers, your hands, your mouth, your hair. Really just touch your partner in ways that feel good to you. And again, no communication necessary on this one. As the receiver, you're going to relax and enjoy. Same thing. No need to talk. Just be. Just experience the pleasure. Don't worry if your partner's getting tired or what they're thinking or feeling. It's common for distractions and thoughts to come into our heads. We want to let those go and just be as present as possible. So take turns. Again, 30 minutes each. Give each other a nice sensual touch. Enjoy the pleasure that you're each feeling. And this will probably create a level of intimacy that you may not have experienced before. And take this opportunity to learn about some things that you like. And when you're done with the exercise, have a conversation with your partner. Find out what they liked. Now, some variations that you might want to do next time is maybe you do want to include the genitals or add some communication. You can do this in so many different ways. Again, this is to expand your definition of sex and know that it doesn't always have to lead to intercourse or orgasms. Not only is that, you know, kind of exciting, it actually can deepen your intimacy and can make sex, when you do have it without those goals, even better.
Find more great shows like this on PersonalLifeMedia.com.